from the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 30th day of March 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, the oil industry has posed a court challenge to U.S. EPA's RFS standard. Senator John Tester wants to be able to trace contaminated meat products all the way back to the point of origin and has drafted legislation to make it so. And way out west, farmers and ranchers are bracing for a grasshopper plague. Surveys from the USDA show the grasshopper population is about twice its usual size and could quadruple this summer. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And then I'll update you with the latest headline production agriculture news from the College of ACES. That's the Ag College here on campus. And we'll take up acreage shifts around the nation, pre and post Freedom to Farm. And don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Don Day is away on this Tuesday. Our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer, will be here. And it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract in the wheat at $4.72, up 7.25. July at 4.85 1/4, 7.25 higher. And September futures at 5.01 1/2, up 7.5 cents. July Kansas City wheat for the hard red, 6 cents higher at $4.90 3/4 cents. May corn futures down 2.5 cents, $3.54 1/2. The settlement price, July at 3.66, down 2 1/4. September corn, 3.74 3/4, down 2.5. The harvest month, December, at 3.83 3/4, down 2 3/4. And the March at $3.95, down 2 3/4 in the corn pit. Now the soybeans, May futures, $9.74, up 6.5 cents. July at 9.80 3/4, up 6.25. August at 9.69 1/4, 3 3/4 higher. September at 9.43 1/2, up 2. And November soybeans at 9.26 1/2, up a penny on the afternoon. May bean meal at 2.83.10, that's up 6.20. May oil down 60 cents at 38.67. April live cattle at $96.05, 67.5 cents higher. And April lean hogs at $73.05, up $1.17 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, May contract, $82.37, up 20 cents on the day. Ethanol at $1.56 7/10, down 5 cents. Natural gas at $3.98 6/10, 7 cents higher. And the RBOB gasoline at $2.27 1/2, up a penny and 3 cents on the afternoon. Heating oil futures at 2.12 5/10, 6 cents of a cent higher, and the gold futures at $1,104.50 an ounce, a settlement price down $5.80. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 10,913 is up just about 18 points. The U.S. dollar at 81.47 is up 0.11, and the CRB index at 273.72 is 0.89 higher on the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like as prepared by our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. He says tonight should be clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 37 in northeastern Indiana to 50 in the west central parts of Illinois. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, windy, bit warmer. Highs tomorrow, says Ed, will range from 70 in eastern Indiana to 78 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. Dry weather, he says, will continue through Friday. Unseasonably warm weather continuing on Thursday and Friday, with high temperatures mostly in the 70s. A few 80-degree readings possible in southwestern Illinois. Rather windy conditions will continue on Thursday and Friday. Should be great for drying things. Drying rates, in fact, he says, will be high through the balance of the week due to the sunshine, the high temps, the strong winds. Fields will start to dry out, and some producers might even get a little access to do some pre-planting field work and clean up some of those ruts that they put into the fields last fall with all the rain and the cold and the wet. On Easter Sunday, dry weather and just slightly cooler temperature readings are expected. Temperatures should still run a bit above average. More on the weather at the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. On the phone line this afternoon to help us take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we have just a few hours before the big acreage report comes out from USDA, and it includes grain stocks. That happens at 7:30 tomorrow morning. Are you waiting with bated breath in anticipation?
Well, I think it's going to be one of the more dramatic effect reports that we're going to have for the whole year, Todd. I think that we've waited and looked for these numbers, trying to figure out what the stocks are going to be because of not feeling that the government maybe had a good handle on things, and we still had so much of the corn left in the field. We're going to try to look and see how the feed usage has been. Has the poor test weight, has it affected the amount of corn we've had to use up? And with the number of animals we had, where's our bean meal stocks going to be, as far as that goes? So, the acreage, we've got a lot of different ideas and things of what they may be thinking about, but, will they incorporate all the acres that didn't get planted to wheat and they're coming back out of the CRP, or will we still have a 1 to 2 to 3 million acres that they just don't actually place somewhere? So, then we're going to have to look more at the weather to see what's happening. So a lot up in the air and a lot can change. They told me today the locals on the floor were the most nervous they'd seen them in the last 4 years before any report. That's why we saw beans jump so much right there in the close. They wanted to be even or close to it going into this report in the morning.
Is this because they know that the report is based solely on what USDA hears from farmers, that their planting intentions might be, and that those things could change dramatically as they get into the field and realize what kind of condition that field's in, or if the weather is late, or it just seems like it's an...
There's about 14 ifs out there. If it rains, if it continues to rain, if it quits raining, if we can get out there, if we have time to get our fertilizer on, if the corn can get in the ground before a certain date, all those things, plus the hogs, the demand, what's going on in the world markets, the dollar, the fuel system. We look today that I think we're at about a six-month high for the spread or the differential between ethanol and RBOB. So, a lot of different things flying out there in a lot of different directions. But basically, it's going to be to look and see what the carryouts are really going to look like and, where the acreage is. Will it be a little more beans than what was projected earlier back in February because of the idea that we have been so wet along the way here? Or will we see the corn acres really pop up big?
Have you been able, based on the location of your clientele, to discern regional differences across the Corn Belt and into the southern U.S. as to who might plant more beans, who might plant more corn?
Well, of course, Texas is far behind on planting corn down there, so that's going to probably go into more Milo or some of the drier, the ones that can handle the dryness a little better.
Sure.
We're hearing a few more beans down across the Mid-South rather than corn, and we're hearing a very nervous set of ideas across the northern portion of Illinois where they had so much problem last year in the low test weights and the late planting dates. Central Illinois, we heard last night we were at a meeting and we heard a lot of people that just don't have much fertilizer on, and they can get it on in a hurry, but if they don't have it on by a certain time, we'll maybe see a few more bean acres pop up in those places too. So, a lot of nervousness out there, not knowing what to do and what to look at. But, like I say, I think that probably right now we're seeing, just because of the price, the way the corn has dropped off, maybe a few more people thinking a little stronger about beans.
We thank you for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a look at today's agricultural news.
We would like to thank these sponsors who helped support the recent WILL 20th Annual All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting and all of our agricultural programs on air and online. Bates Commodities, the Andersons, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investments, and L&M Commodities. Thank you. agricultural news. The oil industry yesterday filed a petition in Washington, D.C. Federal Court of Appeals challenging the Environmental Protection Agency's renewable fuel standards. The American petroleum industry and the National Petrochemical and Refiners Association says the EPA standards announced last month are unlawful and unfair because they mandate compliance for 2009 and part of 2010 before the rules are officially implemented. The EPA declined to comment on the petition. A 2007 law required the EPA to set standards in 2008 for the blending of biofuels into the nation's fuels in an effort to curb greenhouse gas emissions. The EPA posted the official notice Friday. The EPA is requiring refiners and oil companies to meet the blending standards for all of 2010 and those for biomass biodiesel for 2009 as well. Senator John Tester has introduced legislation that would require the trading of meat and meat food products that are adulterated or contaminated by foodborne pathogens to their source. According to a statement from Tester's office, contaminated meat products currently are traced back only to the packing plant or butcher shop they came from. Tester's legislation would require USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service to design and implement an initiative to trace tainted meat back to the original source of contamination. Farmers and ranchers across the West are bracing for a grasshopper infestation that could devastate millions of acres of crops and grazing land. Federal officials say grasshoppers will likely hatch in bigger numbers than any year since 1985. A federal survey of 17 states taken last fall found critically high numbers of adult grasshoppers in parts of Idaho, Montana, Nebraska, South Dakota, and Wyoming. USDA used up nearly all of its $5.6 million grasshopper budget last fall, counting the insect population, an annual task, and has no money to spray federally owned range and grassland. If the infestation reaches the level of the 1985 outbreak, federal suppression efforts could cost as much as $40 million. DTN, the Progressive Farmer, will launch an index to gauge the economic confidence of American farmers on April 19th. The Agriculture Confidence Index is the industry's first index designed to determine the level of optimism producers have concerning the current and future financial health of their operations. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks by developing dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is at stuart-peterson.com.
The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Researchers at the U of I have been hard at work looking for ways to improve agriculture in the Midwest. Up next, we'll have three stories from the Illinois Land Grant. Teaching corn to fix nitrogen. Nitrogen fertilization is essential for profitable corn production. It's also a major cost, and it can become an environmental problem. So is it possible to teach corn to fix its own nitrogen, thus eliminating the need for nitrogen fertilizer applications? Well, a University of Illinois agricultural engineer thinks it may be through some research in an emerging area of engineering called synthetic biology. Synthetic biology is a new area of research that combines science and engineering in order to design and build or synthesize novel biological functions and systems. Through this new technology, many scientists believe it may be possible to control biological systems to increase food supplies, produce energy, enhance human health, protect the environment, and even develop nitrogen-fixing corn hybrids. Edamame, or the soybean in the raw. This healthy, protein-packed fresh vegetable fits a modern on-the-go lifestyle, and while the crop has been around for thousands of years, it's now gaining popularity as a new crop in Illinois. Edamame, also known as vegetable soybeans, are popping up in Illinois grocery stores, farmers markets, and even in the McDonald's Asian salad. So how can this old crop be a new crop for Illinois? Illinois consumers spend some $48 billion on food each year, but most of this money leaves the state. Last summer, the Illinois Food, Farms, and Jobs Act was passed to help facilitate the development of the local food system and to keep more of that money in the state. Some U of I researchers believe edamame is a good candidate for the expanding food production system in Illinois. And finally today, a new crop and an old pest. Researchers at the Engineering Biosciences Institute, or EBI, at the University of Illinois, have discovered widespread occurrence of plant parasitic nematodes in the first reported nematode survey of miscanthus and switchgrass. The team's first step was to identify potential pathogenic nematodes of these two top energy-yielding cellulosic ethanol feedstock plants. The nematode survey included samples from 37 miscanthus and 48 switchgrass plots in Illinois, Georgia, Iowa, Kentucky, South Dakota, and Tennessee. The nematode population densities encountered, they say, may present a potential risk to biofuels production. You can always learn more about the University of Illinois and its research in agriculture by visiting the College of ACES website. That's Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. It's at aces.illinois.edu.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On the subject of websites and news from the University of Illinois, the FarmDoc website has a brand new FEFO, that's Farm Economics Facts and Opinions piece. It's penned by farm management specialist and ag economist Gary Schnittke, all about changes in crop acreage sizes since Freedom to Farm. You remember that back in the mid-1990s, don't you? I talked to Gary yesterday morning, and we began our conversation by having him summarize the paper.
What we did was we looked at the largest crops that are grown in the U.S., how the acres changed from 1990 to 94, averages for that period, which was immediately before Freedom to Farm passed. And Freedom to Farm allowed farmers to pretty much plant any crop in any amount of acreage that they wanted. We compared pre-Freedom to Farm to the four-year period from 2005 through 2009. So we looked at corn, soybeans, hay, rice, wheat, barley, grain, sorghum, cotton, peanuts, potatoes, sugar beets, and dry edible beans, and what happened to their acres between those two periods.
And this is the time of year we talk about acre switches quite a bit during the month of March when we released this. Can you tell us what kind of switches were made under Freedom to Farm?
What we saw is a movement towards soybeans and corn, and soybeans from gained 14 million acres from the early period to 2005 to 2009. Corn gained 9 million. So those two crops were the only eight crops that gained in acres. The other crops, hay and rice, were stable, but the big losers were wheat, barley, and grain sorghums.
Yeah, so, and were you able to make any conclusions about that, or were you just looking at the changes in acreage as a policy impact?
A couple of things you can state about that. One is that the major switch, obviously, was from wheat to corn and soybeans. The other thing that we saw was a big switch away from grain sorghum to corn, and those two are pretty well substitutes, and barley lost acres again to corn and soybeans. Actually, the state that gained the most in corn and soybean acres was North Dakota, gained 4 million acres, and other big gainers were Minnesota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas.
Are there reasons behind certain crops gaining, for instance, biotechnology, their ability to be adapted into areas? What kinds of things are shown there?
I would put it to two things. One is the genetic improvements in soybeans and corn compared to wheat and other crops. And if you look at, and that obviously is related to biotechnology as well, but both corn and soybeans, for example, had increases of 1.3 to 1.7% per year, average yield increase, and wheat had 0.7% increase. So, you know, there's a big difference there between corn and soybeans and wheat. So those crops that are gaining are those that where we're seeing technological improvements in. The other thing that went on was biofuels, and that did cause an increase in corn acres.
Which states did you take a look at?
We looked at all states in the nation, and we have a map in the FEFL that shows gains and losses by state. But the big gainers in corn and soybean were the Great Plains and the Greater Corn Belt. Illinois gained 1.2 million acres in corn and soybeans. Radiate out from that, there were lesser gains in states surrounding the Corn Belt. And southern states actually lost acres. Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, Louisiana lost acres, as well as California. And some of the states around Maryland, Delaware, and New Jersey also lost acres.
What else can you determine from the study? What were you looking for other than those things that we've talked about? I see that you have a list for most of the states in the Midwest, 10 of them, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Minnesota, Missouri, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. We've talked about the Dakotas just a bit. Anything else stick out when you look at those?
And we were looking there for what crops substituted from one another in those states. The one that has a different story than the North Dakota, South Dakota is Wisconsin. It gained 944,000 acres of soybeans, 38,000 acres of corn. It's where those acres came from was from hay, a loss in hay. So little different story there.
And the other one that seems to stick out is Indiana, which didn't really have much of a change in crop at all.
No, it remained relatively stable. Gained a little bit in soybeans and lost a little bit in wheat, but yes, Indiana was stable.
Any conjecture in why? Is it just because it's very, very diversified in its land base, or are there other reasons you think?
I think you hit it. It's diversified in its land base. It's getting a little bit out of the Corn Belt, so especially the southern part of the state. So,
thanks for taking the time with us today, Gary. Gary Schnittke is Farm Management Specialist at the University of Illinois. If you'd like to learn more about his article from the Farm Economics Facts and Opinions side of the FarmDoc website, you can always visit it at farmdoc.illinois.edu. The article is titled Changes in Crop Acres Since Freedom to Farm. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Student groups pushing for renewable energy on the University of Illinois' Urbana campus hope administrators will approve a campus wind turbine plan before the grant funds dedicated for it run out. Illinois' Clean Energy Community Foundation awarded the $2 million 5 years ago, but the funds expired June 30th. U of I Student Sustainability Committee Chair Sue Hill Barrett says there are funding sources available to cover the remaining $1.7 million needed to place the turbine on campus, including the U of I Foundation or the capital bill approved by Illinois lawmakers. Barrett says with energy costs exceeding $70 million annually, putting up a turbine would save money in the long run. The student groups are expected to meet with administrators next week about the turbine plan. Spring is here, and that usually means planting time, but it'll have to wait for some farmers in waterlogged central Illinois. Mike Heft of Delavan says April 15th is the date he shoots for when it comes to planting, but he says they're not even close this year. Patrick Kirchhoffer of the Peoria County Farm Bureau says most farmers need to prepare their fields before planting. Kirchhoffer says fields are too damp for that right now, and some warm and windy days are needed to dry things out. The Illinois State Water Survey says the state has gotten more than 100 inches of rain the past 2 years. That's 22 inches above normal. Blood found at the scene of a 1991 bar fight will be tested to see if it matches the DNA of a Central Illinois man convicted of killing his father during the struggle. McLean County Assistant State's Attorney Kim Campbell and an attorney for 43-year-old Donald Whalen agreed today to test the sample. The blood was on a knife found in the Bloomington bar where William Whalen was killed. The source of the blood has never been identified. Whalen's attorney, Jeff Abbott, wants the blood tested against a national database. He believes it could exonerate his client. Donald Whalen is serving a 60-year sentence. A Chicago cabbie accused of trying to send money to a Pakistan-based terrorist with alleged al-Qaeda ties must stay in jail for now. U.S. Magistrate Judge Geraldine Soat Brown told cab driver Rajat Larasib Khan at a hearing today he'll be held in custody for now, but that she would consider a request for bond later. The 56-year-old Khan is an American citizen of Pakistani origin. He was charged Friday with attempting to send money to a Pakistan-based terrorist leader. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason on a Tuesday afternoon. Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist for our home radio station, joins us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast because Don Day is, well, he's on the beaches, I think, in Florida this afternoon.
So wow.
He's enjoying himself. But here in the Midwest, we're enjoying sunshine and warmer temperatures.
Yeah, I think farmers are going to look outside and say, hey, it's getting to be about time.
Yeah,
it's getting warmer and dry here for several days in a row, and the wind will pick up, especially tomorrow, and that's really going to help dry out some of those wet fields. Now, the wettest fields are not going to dry out in 1 or 2 days, but progress will be made on that, and we don't expect any rain across Illinois and Indiana until Saturday. Some of the upper Midwest will start to get rain on Friday, but it looks like a one-day rain coming through. Saturday is the day that we're going to get showers here over the next several days, dry weather otherwise.
Yeah, so we should have dry weather as we went into this on the home radio station, at least. We heard that we'd had an awful lot of rain over the past couple of years, something like 100 inches, 22 inches more than normal, I think, over the two-year period. That's a lot of rainfall.
It's been an extraordinarily wet couple of years indeed, and so the subsoil should really be in good shape at this point. And this last winter, we were at times wet again, although at WILL, our rainfall total, or I should say at the water survey for March, is going to end up slightly below average for March, just 0.3 inches below average. The total is 2.91 inches compared to average of 3.21.
In your work as a meteorologist, have you seen a year that started like this, you think, over time? I know it's kind of tough to think about that, and even tougher as a meteorologist to look out very far and be very accurate, but what do you see in maybe the short-term future as we head through the first 2 or 3 weeks of April?
Well, over the next several days, we're going to stay dry and be unseasonably warm. We'll have a front come through Saturday with some rain behind the front. Temperatures will drop off a few degrees, but I think we'll still stay above average on temperature into the middle of next week. The big question mark comes after about Tuesday of next week. Another system will likely come through, but the timing's not certain on that yet. Behind that next system, temperatures will probably take a little more of a tumble. Maybe to a little below average, but of course average is coming up at this time of year, so average high by then will be in the low 60s across central portions of Illinois and Indiana, and upper 50s, lower 60s in the upper Midwest. We probably will have more frequent showers and thunderstorms mid-month, not every day, but maybe every 4 or 5 days a system will come through, which is typical for April.
North America, not the only place that's looking to put a corn crop into the ground at this time of year. China and their northeastern provinces should be gearing up. Did you take a look and have an idea of what they look like?
Some of the northeastern provinces have been dry of late, but they may get some showers the next couple of weeks. But they're dry right now. Where corn is being planted already in the Yangtze River Basin, it's been quite wet lately. So corn planting is slow there. So slow in the southern corn producing areas where they've been getting some rain, but farther north right now, the concerns with dryness, but this time of year, it's usually pretty dry there, and they'll probably see a change here as we go through the month of April.
Ed, thank you so much for all your service.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist at WILL. That's our home station. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media right here in Urbana-Champaign.